Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Joel Hargis, an instrument-rated private pilot who flies regularly around Florida and the Southeast for business in his Mooney. Joel is EAA Chapter 534 President and Young Eagle Coordinator promoting aviation.
Hello, I'm Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network here at Sun and Fun 2022. It's the 48th Sun and Fun, and we've got a pretty nice day out there. It's certainly warming up. The airplanes are about to fly for the air show, and we're here in the studio today interviewing just a great young lady that I met last year, Olivia Jenkins. Welcome, Olivia.
Thank you.
Olivia is with the Civil Air Patrol, and you've been with the Civil Air Patrol now. Are you doing that?
Almost six years.
Yeah. So you must like it.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit, you know?
Just a little bit. And what is your current rank in the
I'm currently a cadet major in the Civil Air Patrol.
A cadet major?
Yes, sir.
And what kind of responsibilities does that bring?
All kinds of different things. So it can be anything from kind of like a background, like support staff role, where, you know, I'm making schedules, making sure that things are happening in the background, or cadet commander. I was a cadet commander of my local unit for over 2 years. So it can entail almost anything at this point. So kind of over time you progress and you take on different roles, and by this point it's like, all right, I can really fill any of those roles because of what I've done in the past.
And the experience, right?
Right.
So, gosh, you're managing cadets at this rank, if you will.
Right.
Right? And kind of running a show, and because at a certain point the adults that oversee Civil Air Patrol, they pretty much let you guys run it, don't they?
Yeah. To a certain extent, absolutely. There's always, you know, there are always going to be the adults there for safety reasons, kind of overseeing, watching what we do. But as far as hands-on training, that's almost fully cadet-led, especially at cadet activities.
So, this is what blew my mind last year when we sat down and talked to you. The management and responsibility and things that you guys just get ingrained in you at such a young age, I think is phenomenal. And how old are you?
I'm 18.
18 years old. And so when you say you were a cadet commander, how many cadets did you command?
So that actually ranged. I took over as cadet commander in 2019, around August. Of course, you know, COVID hit March 2020. So when I took over as cadet commander, I had about 16 cadets. By the time COVID hit in March, I had about 32, and then we had to switch to online. A whole bunch of things happened. There were some people who left, some people who joined, just all kinds of different stuff happened. But then once we came back, the number was down a little bit, and now we're starting to rebuild again. So now we have a lot more new people, which it adjusts my position from more of, you know, an executive leadership role to now I get to be more hands-on, and I get to mentor more of those cadets who are just coming in. So I'm kind of all over the place with how many cadets it is. It depends on the event or at a local unit. It's kind of all over the place.
And so let me ask you, for young people that might be sitting out there watching right now, why would they want to do that? What are the advantages? What was your draw, and what would be maybe their draw? From, you know, there's people are after different things, right? And so what are the draw for the young folks to do this?
So there's a huge draw for basically anyone who's interested in the military, interested or has like kind of high career goals, anyone who's college bound, anyone who's looking into service academies, anything similar to that, or interested in aerospace or cybersecurity or anything kind of in that realm, we have something for everyone. So when I first joined when I was 12, I was really interested in aerospace. I was like, I really want to learn how to fly airplanes. At the time, I joined and was like, airplanes, yes, cool. I ended up staying for the leadership aspect. At that age, I kind of joined and I was like, there's just so much going on here. I want to learn about all of it. So I kind of just was like a sponge. I just took in everything I could. And then as time progressed, I worked my way into leadership positions. It's like, I really like this. I really like learning how to manage myself, how to manage people, how to manage time.
And let me deep dive that, because that's very powerful stuff. What made you enjoy the leadership, enjoy the manage? What drew you? What made you really like that?
So what I really liked about that was being able to see what effects I can have on other people by relating myself to them. So I would see other people come in behind me, and I would see that they have these big goals and that they want to fly airplanes or that they want to lead other people. And I would be able to relate myself to them and then be like, this is what I did. I had this really cool experience. I took this opportunity and it turned into this really cool thing that I got to do. So I really wanted to be able to kind of help other people figure out exactly how to maximize their potential, and just kind of like ran with it.
You speak way beyond your years, young lady. I mean, oh my gosh. So you enjoyed being the example. That you thrived on that.
Absolutely.
Well, that's, like I say, wise beyond your years. And it speaks to the program, right?
100%.
I mean, where else do you get that?
You don't. I mean, JROTC is one thing where, you know, you're in high school for 4 years, you can be in JROTC for 4 years. In Civil Air Patrol, you can join at age 12, and then at age 21, you age out, you become a senior member. And then as senior members, you still can take an active role in helping to mentor those cadets. So it really is a lifelong program. It's not like JROTC that lasts 4 years. It's in the classroom once a day. It's outside. It's completely a volunteer organization. So you get to choose what you want to do with it, whether you go in and you're in for a year, 2 years, maybe even five. Or if you go in and you're like, I like this a lot, I want to stay here, you can absolutely do that. You have 9 years as a cadet and then the rest of your life after that.
And so, yeah, I actually know several retired military folks that are officers in the Civil Air Patrol, even at my home airport and things. So, you can do it your whole life, really, and
right.
Be involved in Civil Air Patrol. And so you talked about the kid aspect and the mentoring and all of that. What else does the Civil Air Patrol do?
So Civil Air Patrol has three primary missions. They are aerospace education, the cadet program, and emergency services. So there are a lot of different... There are a lot of little details to all of those. The cadet program we kind of already touched on. Aerospace education is another huge one that I've kind of gone through the Cadet Wings program. Again, that's part of the cadet program. Cadet is in the name. But through Civil Air Patrol, I was able to go through flight training and finish off my private pilot's license, and they paid for it. So that's part of aerospace education, and then we do emergency services as well. So here at Sun and Fun, if an ELT were to go off, there's about a 98% chance that Civil Air Patrol would be the ones responding, finding the ELT and getting it cleared, figuring out what happened.
So you touched on something I know we talked about last year. You were in the middle of your pilot training about this time last year, right? And had you soloed at that time or just maybe?
I had soloed, but I was kind of in... like cross-country building solo time hours.
Okay. And so I know you've got your private license now. Tell us how that went. So like solo cross-country, that's always a big one when you're getting your pilot's license.
It is.
It's kind of scary. I mean, you for the first time, see ya, you take off. And how did that make you feel?
So there were my first solo cross-country, actually, since we're touching on this. My first one went perfectly fine. In fact, when I landed, my Civil Air Patrol group commander was on the ground waiting, and I got to have lunch with him after. It was very cool. My whole family was there. So there was a huge Civil Air Patrol support behind me through the entire process. They were the ones paying for it. It made my life a whole lot easier. I was on scholarship, so I didn't have to worry about the financial aspect, which was a huge piece. Oh. I would not have been able to finish off my private license without Civil Air Patrol. Now, that being said, my second solo cross-country, I got into a little bit of a weather situation, but managed to work my way out of it.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so I was flying. My cross-country route was supposed to be Tampa North up to...
Where'd you take off from?
Tampa North Airport.
Tampa North Airport was your point of origin, okay.
I was supposed to go up to Crystal River and then up to Cross City from there.
That's a haul.
It is. It's a little bit.
And then all the way back?
All the way back.
Tampa North.
Just straight back. So I start flying up to Crystal River, past my first checkpoint.
What time of year was this?
This was probably March or so.
Oh, okay. That's a pretty good time to do it, really.
I would think so, too. So I was listening to my weather, listening ahead, making sure that everything was clear. And everything was reading clear skies, no wind. It was beautiful. So I'm flying, and I notice a broken layer forming below me. So I, of course, below me. So I...
What were you in?
I was in a 172.
Okay.
So nice little Cessna.
Yep.
Comfy four-seater.
That's a great trainer.
So I kind of, you know...
And what altitude were you at a broken level below you?
So I was at about 3,500 feet. So I went ahead and I ascended up to 4,500. And just to make sure that there was enough clearance below me, because it was a broken layer, it wasn't really doing anything, so I was just kind of hanging out.
I think that's the rule, isn't it?
I went a little more than 1,000 feet above.
Good.
I just wanted to make sure that there was plenty of room.
Sure.
So I keep going, I'm keeping an eye on it, and kind of before my eyes it starts to like transform. It's getting a little bit thicker, I'm seeing less and less ground and more and more clouds.
It's building is what it's doing.
It was definitely... I was still listening to all of the weather, everything around me, everything ahead of me, and it was all still saying clear skies. So I was like, this is weird. I was like, maybe I'm lost. This was the first time I'd ever flown with an electronic GPS. So I was used to, like, being able to look at my chart and look at the ground and be like, this is exactly where
Dead
I am.
Reckon.
So it was the first time I'd ever flown with an electronic GPS. I was like, okay, this is weird. The GPS says I'm here. I know that it's accurate because I can tell from the last checkpoint that I saw from where I am that I'm in the right place. But then these clouds just keep getting worse. So over the course of probably 10 minutes or so, it goes from that broken layer to I can't see the ground at all.
Oh boy.
So at that point, I was kind of like, this isn't good.
It's decision-making time.
It was decision-making time. So with where I was in accordance to the GPS and with... where I knew I should have been, as long as I had stayed on course, which I knew that I had, because I'd been watching my instruments.
GPS, yeah.
So I knew where I was supposed to be in relation with Crystal River, which was supposed to be my first stop. And I was basically directly over top of them. And I was like, all right, I have options to make here. I can either keep heading north and hope that it dissipates. I can turn around and go back south and hope that it's not there anymore. Or I can try to figure out how I can get onto the ground. So what ended up happening was I saw a hole over the Gulf, because I was inland a little way. So I saw a hole over the Gulf, and I was like, all right, I don't know exactly how far above the ground this layer is, because everything was still reading clear skies. It's like, I'm not 100% sure, but I can go for the hole. If it looks like it's too low, I'll just climb back up and head south, try to go home. So I did that. Luckily, the clouds were they were high enough that once I got through,
weren't
I was clear.
Really.
I was okay. So I jumped into the pattern, landed, got over, parked, and it was like, I had my second. I took my breather, made sure that I was okay. I called my dad immediately. That was the first thing, because my parents were supposed to be meeting me in Crystal River.
Oh.
So that would have been interesting if I didn't land there.
Yeah, but so you got in there.
I got in, and then... basically, as soon as I got in, I went into their FBO, let them know I was here, said, hey, just letting you guys know, your weather's not accurate right now. Just kind of talked to them for a little bit. It rained for like 5 minutes, and then it all went away. Cleared out. I was able to fly up to Cross City and then back home. So
wow, that's a great story.
It was, definitely probably one of like... I was asked in an interview, a job interview the other day, what's the hardest decision you've ever had to make? And that was the story that I told him. Because it's like, all right, either I'm going to crash into the ground, hopefully not, but you never know. I could get disoriented or lost or something. I was like, there's always that potential that I can crash into the ground. Or I'll figure it out. And I figured it out. So
were you talking and squawking while you're doing that? Or you got flight following going?
I didn't have flight following. Nope.
Why not?
Just didn't have flight following.
No.
Nope. I had no towered fields, so I was just kind of going.
Oh, so you,
going.
Yeah. You might consider them as a resource.
Oh, absolutely. Every cross country since.
There you go. Well, we learned a lesson.
I learned that
right?
One.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And just one more on that, because I want to get back to some more Civil Air Patrol stuff. But I think this is fascinating. And for younger, anybody thinking about getting their pilot's license, that story right there is real, man. I mean, that's why I asked her about, you know, solo cross country, because that's a changing point in your life and your pilot career. I mean, that's a big day. So tell me about your check ride.
Oh, it was scary. It was scary.
Isn't it though?
I went in.
It is. And you're already, but you're just scared to death.
Right. I kind of just had to trust myself at that point that I knew what I was talking about for the oral and that I knew what I was doing for the practical. I had almost 20 hours of solo time going into my check ride. So I knew that I was comfortable with the aircraft, which was super important. But once I got in, we started going. The oral went pretty well. There were a couple of things that, like, tripped me up. But then afterwards, my DPE was like, I normally don't ask that. I just wanted to see how you'd respond. And I was like, okay. Like, that was really scary, but okay. But, no, it was super windy, and there was a lot of traffic. I was at an airfield that I had flown into a total of 3 times.
Where was that?
It was Tampa Executive Airport.
Okay, yeah.
So I had flown in there a total of 3 times, and they were all on Civil Air Patrol O flights. So those were going back, like, a few years, so I hadn't been at that field in a while.
It's not bad. It's a nice crosswind runway there.
It is.
No matter how the wind's blowing, you can usually get pretty straight into it.
It is. So there was a lot of traffic. It was super windy that day. I think we had, like, up to 15-knot gusts.
Yikes.
So it was a lot for a check ride, considering that we had had, like, perfect weather the week before when I had been, you know, practicing, like, in the air every day. But it worked out. I trusted myself. I trusted my experience, my pilot skills, all of that, and it turned out great. As soon as I shut off that engine, she was like, all right, you're a private pilot now. And that was like my moment. I was like, I really just did that. That had been my goal since I was 10, and it worked out.
And congratulations. That's a big deal. We were talking in the green room that, I said, welcome to the 1%, and you said, well, I'm the 7% of the 1%, right. And that is?
That's the female percentage.
Right, female pilots. And so we need more female pilots. I encourage young ladies all the time to think about their pilot's license or a career in aviation. And so one of the last things I want to elaborate on is the Cadet Wings program. It was your scholarship. What do you got to do to qualify for that, Olivia?
So I know people who have applied for Cadet Wings, and because of their Civil Air Patrol experience, they've gotten it with relatively little flight experience. But that being said, I know people who have applied for it with more flight experience than Civil Air Patrol experience and gotten it because of their flight experience. So it's really just that combination. They're looking for well-rounded candidates. So they're looking for cadets who are preferably cadet officers, who are past their first solo, which they'll pay for your first solo. There are Civil Air Patrol flight academies where you can go for a week. It's like $800, and it'll get you 10 hours in the air plus up to your first solo for those who make it that far, for those who can kind of train that quickly.
Right.
They'll cover that first solo expense, and then they just ask that that's a requirement. And then the written exam as well. Those are kind of the 3 checkboxes. As they're looking for cadet officers, you don't have to be a cadet officer. I know people who have gotten it without being a cadet officer. They're looking for you to have already passed your written exam, which, again, I know people who haven't taken the written exam. They've never started ground school. They have glider time but no powered time, and they've still gotten it. So there are all kinds of different ways of getting the scholarship, and it's really open to almost anyone, any level of experience, whether in Civil Air Patrol or with flight experience. So me personally, Civil Air Patrol paid for my ground school and written exam. So that was already taken care of. And then I already had my solo.
Man.
And then I was a cadet officer at the time that I applied as well. So I checked all 3 of their boxes. And then they awarded me with, it ended up coming out to almost $10,000 in scholarships.
Nice.
Toward my private pilot's license, and then they also gave me a bonus towards my instrument.
So you told me that you obviously graduate this spring, and you're going to go to Embry-Riddle.
I am.
And we discussed, you're talking about business and maybe aerospace business or
aviation business.
And you're going to do that ROTC.
Yes, Air Force ROTC.
Air Force ROTC. So your intent is to come out with a commission?
Yes.
But you didn't want the scholarship and ready to sign the contract yet?
Nope, not yet. So I'm still a little bit undecided. I'm looking at going aeromed, flying helicopters into trauma sites and picking up patients, bringing them to the hospital. So I'm kind of hoping it's one way or the other. Either I'll go military and I'll fly for the military, which is definitely a huge goal. That's something that I've kind of always wanted to do. Or more recently, I've been getting into I've been doing ambulance ride-alongs, and I'm scheduled to do an aeromed ride-along, so on the helicopter, which I'm super excited about. But I'm kind of trying to like weigh my options, see which one is going to pull me a little bit more.
So we're just running out of time. I love sitting and talking to you. You're so inspirational. Gosh.
Thank you.
I would say get your commission, apply to flight school for the Air Force, and fly fast jets.
I like fast planes.
That's what I think.
I like going fast.
If I were you. And I think you got the entire package to do that.
Thank you.
So thanks, Olivia, for coming in and talking to us again this year. What a great example of what can be done, through the Civil Air Patrol and their programs and their leadership. I am Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network here at Sun and Fun in beautiful Lakeland, Florida. Please come down to the show. Watch some more of our stuff coming up on air very soon. See ya.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.